is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. And we have a very special program for you today. We have Richard Gage, AIA, that stands for the American Institute of Architects, and he is the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. We're presenting today, aside from our discussion with Richard, we are presenting excerpts from his important lecture. It's a new lecture, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction. It's a two-hour DVD that's available for your donation to WBAI in support of Taking Aim of $75. 2 hours. And included in this impressive DVD set are three important cards. Glossy, beautifully designed cards that describe what caused the destruction of World Trade Center, the Twin Towers, and World Trade Center 7. You will be experts once you listen to this DVD and have these cards in front of you. You will be able to go out and organize and discuss with everyone to ensure that there is a new investigation, a true investigation, such as has been happening in New York with the petition drive. We also want to announce today that the petition drive, the New York 9/11 petition drive for an independent investigation, has reached 30,000 signatures, the number that is necessary to put the petition on the ballot. The ballot, it will go on the 2009 ballot, that is the mayoral election, which is a very important election in New York. And we're trying to get over 100,000 signatures. So today there are two things you can do. You can call WBAI at 212-209-2950 to contribute $75 for 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction, and you can call 646-537-1755, which is the hotline for the NYC 911 initiative, or go to its website, www.nyc911initiative.org, pull down the petition, and get signatures. Richard, are you on the line with us?
I sure am, Maya. It's great to be with you guys today again.
Good to be with you, Richard.
Thank you, Ralph.
I want to mention that this important DVD of Richard's is an extraordinary blow-by-blow demonstration with the full visual documentation and dramatic evidence of implosion, of controlled demolition. It's an extraordinary expose, not merely of the official fiction, but what actually happened, how the towers were brought down. What are the mechanisms? What is the physical evidence? What are the eyewitness accounts of the explosions that occurred, of the reduction of steel to molten liquid, of the compression of concrete to pulverized powder, and what are the physical elements that were involved in producing this effect? It's relentlessly laid out with meticulous documentation, dramatically presented visually. It'll take your breath away, brothers and sisters. This DVD is an extraordinary event, and you need to have it because with it you are armed politically, intellectually. You're ready to go to battle with people who are in a state of disbelief or of denial, and to mobilize the many for this challenge to those in authority who, after all, have committed what it can only be called treason at the top. That's what it is. It's a criminal cabal that has effected a crime against the population of the United States, treason at the top, the little continuation of the series of such events that have peppered our history as the ruling class has sought permanent war to sustain its profits and its exploitation overseas.
Richard has been a practicing architect for over 20 years and has been involved in major construction projects as a project manager and as a designer. This has included high school campuses, gymnasiums, large urban projects of retail and office space that include the current project, 1,200 tons of steel framing. He is coming to the analysis of the collapse of the Twin Towers and Building 7 from a position of experience. The official fiction didn't make sense. And that's why Richard has been gathering engineers and architects and other people seeking the truth to get involved with AE911truth.org. And that is why he has produced this incredible DVD, which we bring to you. It's a two-hour DVD, and they call it the 2008 Research Edition because it compiles so much research, and it'll help you make the presentation yourself. Richard, do you want to give us a brief word about what you've been doing recently before we go to the excerpt from the DVD?
Well, sure. We just went out to New York to speak to the people there. WeAreChange.org had a conference that was very exciting to attend. I spoke to many people there and also noted that they had marched 300 or 400 people taking over the streets at Ground Zero in peaceful way, demonstrating with their shirts and reinvestigate 9/11. With their signs and waking up the people of New York. It was a sight to see. In fact, it was covered all across Russian national television, as a matter of fact. So I was happy to be a part of some of that. And I'm going to also be coming up. I'm going to Denver in the end of September and then Cincinnati. And we're going to be going also to Halifax in Nova Scotia. And then Europe, we have 7 countries in 14 days to speak to in the middle of November. It's going to be quite a schedule.
Terrific. We're going to play an excerpt from 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction. Very important to listen closely. And this is, remember, a small excerpt. It's about a 23-minute excerpt describing the collapse of World Trade Center 7 as a controlled demolition. What's incredible is the methodical way that Richard goes through the scientific method and the hypothesis of whether these buildings could be brought down by fire or if they were a controlled demolition. And it's not just Richard, it's all the other important engineers who you'll hear on this DVD. This week, we're going to deal with Building 7. Next week, we'll play an excerpt that addresses the Twin Towers themselves. So, Michael, if we can go to the DVD and first remind our listeners where to call. 212-209-2950. Get on the phone. Remember, the DVD will be in your home.
Controlled demolitions can be engineered in many different ways. Normally, the purpose of a controlled demolition is to remove a structure while avoiding damage to adjacent structures and to do so economically. Typically, a tall building like this is demolished by placing thousands of cutter charges throughout the columns and beams in the building and then detonating them in a very precise order, starting with the interior structures and then progressing outward. Synchronistically timed, floor by floor. Destroying the interior columns allows the unsupported weight to pull the exterior inward. Destroying the building from the ground up allows the weight of the building to be harnessed to do much of the destruction. So the result is an implosion, producing a vertical, symmetrical collapse at free fall speed into a consolidated rubble pile that's broken up and ready for loading and shipment. Now, this is a feat that only a handful of companies in the United States can accomplish. Let's take a look at some of the key characteristics of controlled demolition. First, we have a sudden onset of destruction at the base of the structure. We have straight down symmetrical collapse into its own footprint because demolition waves remove the column support, resulting in a free fall speed virtually through the path of what was the greatest resistance, thousands of tons of structural steel. We have a total dismemberment of the steel structure, so it's loaded and ready for shipment. We have minimal damage to adjacent structures, sounds and flashes of explosions heard and seen by witnesses, enormous clouds of pulverized concrete, squibs sometimes, explosive charges that go off at the wrong times, chemical evidence of cutter charges. These are all fairly typical, and they go to show us direct evidence of explosive destruction. Now, the interesting thing is that not one of these typical characteristics of controlled demolition can be explained or accounted for by fire, let alone all 10 of them. Typically, we'll have government documentation, expert corroboration, foreknowledge, and video documentation, all of which supports the hypothesis of controlled demolition, providing proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Let's take a look at World Trade Center 7 now. It was 47 stories tall, what would have been the tallest building in 33 of our states, half the height of the Twin Towers, dwarfed only by its proximity to what was, for a couple of years, the tallest buildings in the world. It was not hit by an airplane. It was the third World Trade Center high-rise to collapse on 9/11 at about 5:20 in the afternoon. World Trade Center 7 was hit by debris from the North Tower. You can see it being pelted here. And it sustained about 8 fires, according to NIST, on various floors. This is the World Trade Center 7, 47 stories high. Here we have the 12th and 13th floor fires and the 7th floor fire on the north side of the building, the opposite side of the building that was being pelted by the North Tower. Curiously enough, the Securities and Exchange Commission was operating out of this floor, which lost thousands of files related to hundreds of cases it was actively pursuing against Wall Street companies like Enron and WorldCom. So we are looking for an investigation that goes well beyond the buildings, of course. Now, let's take a look at the evidence of World Trade Center 7 and see how it stacks up against the typical features of a controlled demolition, starting with, is there a sudden onset of destruction? Let's listen to this emergency word.
We were watching the building actually go to about fire. The bottom floors of the building were on fire, and we heard this sound that sounded like a clap of thunder. Turned around, we were shocked to see that the building was, it looked like there was a shock wave ripping through the building, and the windows all busted out, and it was horrifying. Then, about a second later, the bottom floor caved out, and the building followed after that, and we saw the building crash down all the way to the ground. We were in shock, and then
a sound of a clap of thunder, a shockwave ripping through the building, and windows busting out, and then the building coming down. Do we have a straight down symmetrical collapse into the building's footprint? Let's listen to Dan Rather narrate this collapse for us as we take our first look at the collapse of Building 7.
What you're seeing are high shots. Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself.
Describe that.
Now we go to videotape, the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
What, Dan? Deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down. Dan never repeated these words after this first day. In fact, we didn't see this building coming down after 9/11. Let's take a look from West Street. Maybe we haven't quite understood yet what's going on. Well, I'm not quite convinced yet. Let's take a look in this side-by-side comparison with a known controlled demolition on the right. Did the building fall into its own footprint? Pretty much so. A little bit of overlapping into the street. I could have done a much better job myself. A tidy rubble pile, nevertheless. Do we have demolition waves? And how do these remove the column support? Well, here's a floor plan of Building 7. Now, to bring a building smoothly, symmetrically, into its own footprint without falling over, what we have to do is remove the core columns, because what we want to do is bring the outside of the building in on itself. Now, this involves a high degree of precision that fire is not capable of, being an organic process. We're told by NIST in a December 18th update meeting that we attended via telecon that there is virtually no influence in the collapse from the debris from the North Tower or the damage caused by it, or from the diesel that may have been spilling out of the diesel line. Why? Well, the east penthouse is the first part of the building to collapse a few seconds before the global collapse. NIST is now targeting column number 79. That is where they say the collapse initiated. Do we have a free fall speed of collapse through the path of greatest resistance? Let's listen to David Chandler.
We can measure the downward acceleration of Building 7 by video frame analysis. I used a magnifying glass to place markers on the corner of the building on each frame. From this, we can get a data table and various graphs. The slope of this graph indicates acceleration, which is shown here to be about minus 10.279 plus or minus 0.6. Free fall in a vacuum is minus 9.8 in these units. That falls within the margin of error of this measurement. In other words, the rate of fall of Building 7 in the first few seconds is indistinguishable from free fall in a vacuum.
What are we talking about? You can see, second by second, the building gaining downward momentum. You can plot the drop distance on a graph of time, and it fits the free fall curve almost perfectly. What does this mean? That the columns had to have been removed, and removed virtually simultaneously on each floor, synchronistically timed, so the building had no resistance, virtually, on the way down. Do we have a total dismemberment of the steel structure? We had a 47-story skyscraper compressed to four stories. How does this happen? This building had some moment-resisting frames on several floors. That's where the beams are welded very rigidly to the columns. Do we have sounds of explosions? Here's Craig Bartmer from the New York Police Department.
And the whole time you're hearing thoom, 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 thoom. I think I know an explosion when I hear it. I was real close to Building 7 when it fell down. That didn't sound like just a building falling down to me while I was running away from it. There's a lot of eyewitness testimony down there hearing explosions. I didn't see any reason for that building to fall down the way it did. And a lot of guys should be saying the same thing.
How about Kevin McPadden, former Air Force Special Operations Search and Rescue?
He came back over with his hand over the radio, and what sounded like a countdown. And at the last few seconds, he took his hand off, and you heard 3, 2, 1, and he was just saying, just run for your life, just run for your life. And then it was like another 2, 3 seconds, you heard explosions, like ba-boom. It's like a distinct sound. It's not like when the compression, like boom, 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 like floors that were dropping and collapsing. This was ba-boom, and like you felt a rumble in the ground, like almost like you wanted to grab onto something. That, to me, I knew that was an explosion. There was no doubt in my mind.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Do we have enormous clouds of pyroclastic smoke from the pulverized concrete? Watch the concrete entrained in the air racing down every street in each direction at 35 miles an hour. This incredible volume of pyroclastic dust enfolding itself. It takes incredible quantities of heat to create this kind of action. A lot more heat than the 8 various fires that were on these floors. Do we have pools of molten iron? Let's start with the South Tower now. This section applies to the World Trade Center Twin Towers and Building 7. We're told by NIST that this substance must be melted aluminum from the airplane. But melted aluminum looks like melted aluminum. It's silvery. It doesn't glow in daylight conditions. As of 21 days after the attack, the fires were still burning and molten steel was still running, says World Trade Center structural engineer Leslie Robertson to a conference of structural engineers on October 5th, 2001, 1 month after 9/11. Fires burned, molten metal flowed in the pile of ruins, still settling beneath my feet, says Sarah Atlas. Well, what do the first responders and the demolition contractors say about molten metal? Saw pools of literally molten steel. Molten metal beams had just been totally melted. It was dripping from the molten steel. Steel flowed in molten streams. They're finding molten steel, seeing the molten steel, uncovering red-hot metal beams. Molten metal, red-hot, weeks after the event. Molten steel at the heart of the tower's remains. Molten steel beams, streams of molten metal that leaked from the hot cores and flowed down the broken walls. Molten metal dripping from a beam. The end of the beam would be dripping with molten steel. And this structural engineer, Abu Hasan Astani from Berkeley, cites and documents, "I saw melting of girders in the World Trade Center. Still so hot that molten metal dripped down the side of the wall from Building 6. Debris past the columns was red hot, molten, running. A fire truck 10 feet below the ground that was still burning 2 weeks after the tower collapsed. Its metal so hot that it looked like a vat of molten steel. Pieces of steel, still cherry red."
One of the more unusual artifacts to emerge from the rubble is this rock-like object that has come to be known as the meteorite.
It's this fused element of steel, molten steel and concrete and all of these things all fused by the heat.
And architects, engineers, people who work with steel, welders, have just never seen the level of destruction and the level of deformation of this material in our lives.
These cooled meteorites are not aluminum because aluminum doesn't rust. So it's not a melted airplane. What does the gentleman in charge of the cleanup at World Trade Center, Ground Zero, have to say about the molten metal?
Mark Loiseau, the president of Controlled Demolition Incorporated, told the American Free Press that in the basements of the World Trade Center, where 47 central support columns connected to the bedrock, hot spots of literally molten steel were discovered more than a month after September 11th. These incredibly hot areas were found at the bottoms of the elevator shafts, down 7 basement levels. The molten steel was found 3, 4, and 5 weeks later, when the rubble was being removed. He said that molten steel was also found at World Trade Center 7. The highest temperature was in the east corner of the South Tower, where a temperature of 1,377 degrees Fahrenheit was recorded. The molten steel in the basement was more than double that temperature.
What are we talking about here? Here is Building 7 at A and B, and here is the North Tower and the South Tower. These hot spots are 1,340 to 1,370 degrees. These are the temperatures of the hottest office fires. There was no fire on the surface of Ground Zero after the collapses. What are we measuring here? We're measuring the molten metal that was seen by these first responders 4, 5, 6 stories down below in the basements that was surely at least twice or three times these temperatures. What's the problem with that? Office fires, Eager says 1,200 degrees. NIST claims 1,800 degrees, for which we have no evidence for office fires of that temperature in the Trade Center towers. Well, when something's salmon or lemon colored, it's 1,500 or 1,800 degrees. And structural steel doesn't even begin to melt until 2,700 or so degrees. We're missing 1,000 to 2,000 degrees of temperature, heat energy required to produce this stuff. Where is it coming from? We'll be taking a look at a possible suspect, thermite, which reaches temperatures of 4,500 degrees. Now, let's listen to John Gross, lead engineer of NIST, tell us about the molten metal from his perspective.
I'm curious about the pool of molten steel that was found in the bottom of the tower.
I am too.
And
please tell me about it. Have you seen it?
Well, not personally, but eyewitnesses there found huge poles of molten steel beneath the towers, and some scientists don't think that the collapse of the building could have melted all that steel, and physics professor analyzed some of the steel, and Stephen Jones, and he found evidence of thermite residue, mm-hmm. which would explain how the buildings collapsed by means of pre-planted explosives. So, have you analyzed the steel for any of those residues?
first of all, let's go back to your basic premise that there was a pool of molten steel. I know of absolutely nobody, and there's no eyewitness who said so, nobody who's produced it.
You'd get down below and you'd see molten steel. Molten steel running down the channel rails. Like you're in a foundry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like lava.
Like lava.
Out still on the rubble, it's still, I believe, 1,100 degrees. The guy's boots just melt within a few hours.
This is how it's been since day one.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And this is 6 weeks later, almost 6 weeks later.
And as we get closer to the center of this, it gets hotter and hotter. It's probably 1,500 degrees. We've had some small windows into what we thought was a core at some point, and it looked like an oven. You know, it was just roaring inside. And it was just a bright, bright reddish-orange color.
Underground, it was still so hot that molten metal dripped down the sides of a wall from Building 6.
I know of absolutely nobody, and there's no eyewitness who said so, nobody who's produced it.
What is the problem here? We have plenty of eyewitnesses who have produced it. Somebody's lying. I'm going to leave it up to you to make your own conclusions. The last fire was not even extinguished for 3 months after 9/11. Tom Manley says you couldn't even begin to imagine how much water was pumped in there. It was like you were creating a giant lake. Well, thermite contains its own source of oxygen. It burns just as well under water. How about chemical evidence, though? What produced all this molten metal? And what is thermite anyway?
Thermite. An incendiary used by the military, thermite is a compound of iron oxide and aluminum, which when ignited sustains an extreme heat reaction, creating molten iron. In just 2 seconds, thermite can reach temperatures over 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit, quite enough to liquefy steel. We know that open-air fires cannot burn hot enough to melt steel, but metal had melted at the base of the towers. Appendix C of the FEMA report describes sulfur residues on the World Trade Center steel. The New York Times called this the deepest mystery of all. Sulfur slightly lowers the melting point of iron, and iron oxide and iron sulfide had formed on the surface of the structural steel. Sulfur used with thermite is called thermate, producing even faster results.
An FPA 921 is the guide for fire and explosion investigations. Was it used? They say unusual residues could arise from thermite, magnesium, or other pyrotechnic materials. In a crime scene, which this was an example of, did NIST use the guide? No. They acknowledged they didn't even look for such evidence. But others did. Dr. Stephen Jones performed chemical analysis on the previously molten metal. He does some background research, again part of the scientific method. Thermite would create a characteristic burn pattern with a white ash, a white-yellow hot liquid metal, an intense white reaction zone seen. It would also leave behind chemical evidence. Common elements such as iron, aluminum, copper, calcium, silicon. Unusual elements such as fluorine and manganese left behind also in the residue. These elements here. He sent a sample from this 40-pound chunk of previously molten metal from one of those meteorites. He finds that it's predominantly iron, so we can rule out aluminum from the jet plane. It has small amounts of aluminum, sulfur, and potassium, and manganese and fluorine in abundance. Manganese is from the potassium permanganate, commonly used as an oxidizer in thermite. Fluorine is also used in Sol-gel-type thermite charges. So these appear to be the thermite fingerprint. Let's take a look at what else Dr. Jones found in the slag from the end of this memorial at Clarkston University. He performs his X-ray fluorescence on this small piece of slag and finds, once again, iron, sulfur, potassium, manganese, calcium. Gel explosives are all a super thermite, tiny aluminum particles in iron oxide in this Sol gel. They can be cast into shape. They're like a clay. Lawrence Livermore Lab did research on this, and this invention offers a thermite-based apparatus for cutting target materials. You pack the thermite in here, and you...
This is Taking Aim with...
Ralph Schoenman.
And Maya Schoen, and we come to you during the WBAI Fun Drive this weekend next with a very special gift for you. 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction. A presentation by Richard Gage, AIA, that was recorded May 18th, 2008 in San Rafael, California. It's a two-hour impressive DVD for your contribution of $75 to WBAI. And with it come these three incredible postcards with explanations, part of the PowerPoint presentation of the DVD. What you haven't been seeing during this audio presentation today are the impressive video and diagrams that continue throughout the 2 hours, illustrating and providing further explanation of the points that Richard is making in the presentation. 212-209-2950. Ralph and Richard?
Richard's presentation is an extraordinary PowerPoint visual demonstration of the evidence as such. You see physically how indeed the towers were brought down through controlled demolition. You see the testimony of people who witnessed it. You see the expert analysis of those who are not purchased and bought by the authorities and who have the authority, they have themselves the scientific authority to document and demonstrate what they are describing. This is a compelling visual demonstration of the method through which the towers were brought down, the controlled demolition, the treason at the top that required, because this had to be, as Richard puts it so clearly, this was not the contrivance of someone out of a cave in Afghanistan. Neither the thermite or the mechanisms for implanting controlled explosives at key points throughout the structure were feasible from a cave in Afghanistan. This is a controlled demolition operation of the authorities themselves. Richard, why would, speak please to the essence of this this data, where it takes us, what it means.
Richard, before you do, I want to tell our listeners we are on only until 6 o'clock today when the WBAI news goes on. So please, this is the moment. Get to your phone 212-209-2950, or you're going to miss out. Richard.
The importance of the information, as you highlighted, Ralph, so well, is that we have a real problem here in our democracy if something like this happened. Obviously, as you indicated, it is some sort of an inside job, and we don't know how high it goes, how wide it goes, but if this happened in America, the question is, why? And of course, could it happen again? Well, we know we're in Afghanistan and Iraq. We know Iraq is based on a package of lies. We ought to really look at the lies relative to Afghanistan and Osama bin Laden, who on, I think, September 16th, came out and said, I didn't do this. If you want to know who did this, look at your own secret government, who wants to make this century a century of conflict between Christianity and Islam. Does that sound like a terrorist taking proud credit for his work? I don't think so. And then a month later, we invade Afghanistan, and we find this tape that appears not to be Osama bin Laden at all. And taking credit for the event. So Google Fatty Osama, because this is the fat one who makes this claim. Anyway,
Richard, I was looking on the AE911truth.org website at some of the statements by the members, the people who have come on board AE911truth, such as Anthony Arthay, a licensed structural engineer, 15 years of experience in building design, and he states right there for everyone to read, buildings collapsed by controlled demolition methods. Fire and impact were insignificant in all three buildings. It's impossible for the three to collapse at free fall speed unless they were controlled demolitions. Were the laws of physics suspended on 9/11? That's what he would say. And Claude Robert Briscoe, more than 45 years in civil and structural engineering design and construction of bridges, buildings, foundations, earth-retaining structures, roads, highways, commercial, industrial, public work facilities. And he also says the collapse of the three WTC buildings would seem to defy the laws of mechanics, conservation of energy, and known structural failure behavior. The case for the destruction of the three WTC buildings by means of controlled demolition is overwhelming. And overwhelming is what the presentation is on this two-hour DVD. We have an hour on the World Trade Center 7 and an hour on the Twin Towers. This is new material. You haven't seen this before as Richard presents it in this lecture, step by step. Richard, it's quite impressive what you did with the PowerPoint and the DVD. And what's been the response?
Oh, well, we now have 475 architects and engineers putting their reputations, licenses, degrees on the line, signing our petition demanding a real investigation. We are on our way to 1,000 architects and engineers, and we will bring that number to, and many of them, along with thousands of other supporters, to Washington, D.C., when in a major press conference when we present this demand to Congress. We're really looking forward to that. I hope it'll be no more than 3 or 4 months away. We need the help of all your listeners to go on site to our website and sign the petition as well, because we have over 2,000 others.
And we need them to keep WBAI on the air presenting material. This isn't the first time we've had Richard on. Very important to keep WBAI broadcasting so we can have presentations and conversations with Richard and other people about 9/11. Ralph and I want to tell you outright, over the years we have been presenting political analysis from the very beginning with Ralph's seminal presentation of World Trade Center Uncensored History, which became one of the largest of the WBAI fundraisers. This was the five-hour presentation, and with 9/11 false flag and permanent stakes, a permanent war, the stakes for working people, over and again we've been talking about the political underpinnings of 9/11. A good companion for this, an important companion DVD for these presentations, is this lecture by Richard. 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of the Destruction. Every one of our Taking AIM listeners should have the copy of this DVD. Every one of our Taking AIM listeners should support WBAI and this, support Taking AIM. $75 contribution for WBAI. Keep this station on the air. Keep the station presenting programs such as 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction, and Taking AIM. Hand in hand, remember, we are urging you, get on the phone now. You cannot wait until 9 o'clock tonight. You must do it now. 212-209-2950.
Well, Maya, we have often said on Taking AIM that this work that we are doing and the information that we provide and the analysis that we proffer, this is not by way of a spectator sport, brothers and sisters. What Richard Gage is doing for you here is demonstrating overwhelmingly, first, the basis for exposing the fact that unless the laws of physics were reversed on September 11th, the official fiction regarding means through which the World Trade Center towers collapsed is not sustainable. It is wholly incompatible with the physical law. A building cannot be brought down through hydrocarbon fire. The fires don't reach the point through which they can compromise the integrity of structural steel or concrete. It has never happened. But beyond the demonstration overwhelmingly and massively of how the physical laws are incompatible with the official fiction, what Richard has done is to go way beyond that and produce the specific, overwhelming, and massive physical evidence for what in fact occurred. What did bring the towers down? How was it done? Where were the explosions placed and how were they put there? What type of chemical was required to raise temperatures to the point where steel could be compromised to the point where it was flowing like molten lava? How does reinforced concrete get reduced to pulverized dust? What are the physical means through which this was could be done? What were the physical means through which it was done? PowerPoint, demonstration, evidence, eyewitness, scientific critique and analysis based upon testing that evidence. It's massive, it's overwhelming, it's integrated, and it's there. When you are armed with this knowledge and with this information, it takes your breath away. And from there, the operative question is, what is to be done? For a crime of this magnitude, not merely to be an epiphenomenon, an occasional event, requires a structure of power that is antithetical to the needs of the mass of our people. You cannot change such people. You cannot persuade them. You cannot change them. You cannot contain them. We have to remove them. To do that requires the mobilization of people for an alternative social and economic structure, brothers and sisters. As with the structure of the World Trade Tower, so with the structure of the political economy of our society, there has to be transformation. We have to change. To make change, we have to mobilize for struggle. There's nothing short of that. This is not a new event. Everything that we've done over these past 7 years is by way of demonstrating that throughout the course of our history, the 1% of the population that owns more than 90% of the rest of us combined has captured the state for its own needs and interests against the interests of the mass of our population. We have to take it back. That's a political movement. That's a political struggle. Investigations are at the service of that transformation. The evidence, the mobilization, the shocking of people into an understanding is by way of preparing us to join together. It's a massive democratic task together, the struggle of the many to reclaim our society, because nothing awaits us more than new 9/11s, permanent war, targeting 60 or 100 countries, targeting our own population for martial law. Nothing short of that is what is at stake here, brothers and sisters. Please, equip yourselves. Get the data. Arm yourselves intellectually and politically. Equip yourselves to reach out to others. That is what we're about. That's what we urge you to join us in accomplishing.
212-209-2950. You have about 12 minutes left. Please, there are volunteers and WBAI at the WBAI phones. If the phones are busy, try again. But I don't hear phones ringing now. Let's get all those phone lines going. 212-209-2950. 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction. Your $75 contribution to WBAI. It's a two-hour DVD, and in addition to it, you get these cards, which are a succinct explanation of what the two-hour presentation provides for you. Richard, could you tell us how this lecture came about, the new DVD, the two-hour DVD, and the incredible PowerPoint and visual presentation with it?
Well, I had the first DVD out, which was about over a year ago, and it was the third presentation I gave, and we sold about 5,000 or 6,000 of those DVDs. And there has been a lot of information and evidence, including unignited thermite chips, which is now a part of the new DVD that Dr. Jones has found in every sampling he's done. This is hard, cold, forensic evidence that is available in all of the dust samples that various people have. Many people have turned in some of these. We're asking anybody who has any of this dust to contact us at ae911truth.org. And let us know so that we can help you to get it properly, independently analyzed for additional evidence in concert with Dr. Stephen Jones's work, of course. So this is one example of evidence we have added in. We have taken out some of the other evidence that is somewhat arguable, such that we have a rock-solid body of evidence that it convinces 98% of the people in our presentations. I'm talking about a group of 400 people every other weekend I'm speaking around the country, and I'll say, who believes these buildings were brought down by fires, for the official fiction, as Ralph calls it? There'll be several hands, dozens of hands going up. Often I have mostly people who already believe in controlled demolition, but at the end, only one of those hands, and sometimes none, will go up. In other words, virtually everybody believes in the theory of controlled demolition after seeing this evidence, as shocking as it is, as shocking as the implications of that evidence are. I mean, we may already have lost our democracy. That's the concern. If something like this could happen and they could basically get away with it through control of the mainstream media for so long, it's extremely disturbing. Who may have been involved in this? I mean, who profited? The people that profited the most, the oil industry, the defense industry, the banking industry, the insurance industry, and the media, all of them have directors, boards of directors that sit on each other. They move as a flock. They protect each other. It's been devastating to learn this as a Reagan Republican here. I've had quite a change of heart politically, and I have no more faith in our Democratic Party now, unfortunately, than I did in our Republican Party then. Something else, as Ralph is suggesting, is called for here.
Yes, Richard. In fact, you know, the Democratic Party and Barack Obama have called out 100 countries in which the terrorists, as he calls, as Barack Obama calls them, have to be hunted down. They've called out Pakistan. They've called out Afghanistan. They've called out Venezuela. They've called out now Russia with respect to Georgia. It's an ongoing, permanent process of manufacturing pretexts for sustaining imperial reach. Actually, of course, as we look at the controlled demolition, we also look to how the putative hijackers were themselves agents of the U.S. intelligence services. The Mohammed Attas are multiple-faced people. They're trained at U.S. military installations. Newsweek, Washington Post overwhelmingly documented the fact that these are trained U.S. operatives, and they are multiple, as with the multiple Oswalds, we have multiple Mohammed Attas. We have detailed this over a long period of time in our writing and in our programming, and so with respect to the trade centers and the putative airplanes that hit them, airplanes hit them, brothers and sisters, but they were not piloted. Those maneuvers were not physically possible for pilots, and we've had the pilots, and we've had the evidence, and we've had the massive demonstration of the computer-controlled, ground-controlled
AWACS technology
for crashing of planes into the World Trade Center. This operation is not merely accomplished with the physical destruction of the buildings themselves. From its inception, this was a false flag operation of the authorities with military precision, with long-standing preparation, and the evidence for that is massive. It is as massive as the evidence regarding the physical destruction of the buildings themselves. But what Richard is so extraordinarily eloquent and effective in demonstrating is what actually happened to those towers. What is the massive demonstration of the reality of those days? And that's what this DVD provides you. It'll take your breath away, brothers and sisters. You see it. The PowerPoint demonstration portrays it for you. You see physically what happened. You hear the people who are on the spot. You hear the tape recordings and the visual, the video interviews of the firemen and the policemen and the eyewitnesses and the survivors, as they demonstrate what they saw, and as you hear the soundtrack of what occurred. So here you have not just the theoretical demonstration of the impossibility of the official fiction, but the evidence itself, massive and demonstrable, right there, organized dramatically and passionately, and in this DVD.
Of what physically took place.
And many people ask me, how could they have planted those explosives and gotten away with it or not being seen? Well, in Building 7, which we just heard the evidence for controlled demolition in, all they would have needed to have done is take out the columns, the core columns And perhaps the perimeter columns in the floors 5 and 6, which were mechanical floors, unoccupied floors. It would have been very easy to take those out, effectively knocking the knees out from under the building, which would have caused the 2.5 seconds of actual free fall of that building during its first 2.5 seconds. This is well documented, and NIST denies this. They try to obfuscate the issue in their recent issue of their final final report on World Trade Center 7. The only way a building can fall at free fall speed is if it's doing no work. In other words, if there's no columns resisting it. In other words, if the columns were removed by thermite, which we have physical evidence for.
And Richard, next week when we play the excerpts from the World Trade Center, when we address the Twin Towers, again, there is the issue of how they were brought down with free fall, and you go through a methodical discussion of how that could take place.
And how it did take place, because what Richard has just outlined with respect to Building 7 is also demonstrable with respect to the Twin Towers 1 and 2. They were scheduled for specific electrical rewiring and other services at a point in time. We know when it was done. We know how it was done. We know the security arrangements that were made to affect it. There's no mystery about this, brothers and sisters.
Well,
Rob,
you're taking away our suspense. I wanted to bring suspense so people will tune in next week because we have just a few minutes left. 212-209-2950. Taking Aim is on only 2 hours for this fund drive, 1 hour today and 1 hour next week. And we are brought to you a blockbuster premium. So you have to flood those telephones, everybody. Flood those telephones, brothers and sisters. And next week you're going to have to flood those phones while we are playing the excerpt. 212-209-2950. Our gift to you, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction, 2-hour DVD for your generous contribution to WBAI of $75. Please call now. Richard, last words before we have to move on to the WBAI news.
I would love to see your listeners also send the AE911truth.org link to every architect and engineer in New York. They do not know about this information. It is essential that they do and that they sign our petition demanding a new investigation. Send it to everybody else you know, too. There's a three-page letter you can just download from our website in the download section and send that along with attached to an email to architects and engineers. Everybody can help. It's really, really important. Our country itself is at stake here.
And, Richard, I'd like to close with another quote from one of the architects and engineers who signed on to Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and this is Dennis Henry. He says, I was a city engineer for 34 years for the cities of Jefferson City, St. Joseph, and Raytown, Missouri, and he has designed bridges, roadways, sanitary sewers, you name it. He served for 20 years with the U.S. Navy Reserve Civil Engineer Corps and retired as a commander. And he states, being a civil engineer and understanding the laws of physics, I know that a building cannot fall a free fall speed without the floors already falling, also giving no resistance. Again, testament. And Richard explains how this was done. 212-209-2950. The music has come up. We must say goodbye. Remember to contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net and then go to our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Please visit the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. That's www.ae911truth.org. And remember, go to www.nyc911initiative.org to download the petition and get involved with a new investigation. It can take place in New York City. We're on our way.
With subpoena power, brothers and sisters, that's what is at issue.
Again, 212-209-2950. Keep those phones ringing. We'll be with you next week.
Richard, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ralph and Maya.
And you're tuned to WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. Folks, don't worry. We will accommodate each and every one of you who is calling right now.